It is Science Week this week, so we're very glad that you could join us. And George also, who appears to have a bit of a hangover. He doesn't want to come out and talk to us.
Well, it is very early in the morning for him. He's been up all night squeaking and running around in his little box, and so he's sitting under my collar at the moment, having a little bit of a rest.
Now, the thing is that he has completely disappeared under your collar because he is tiny. He's probably about 5 centimetres long maximum, isn't he?
Yep.
So how would you describe him?
Oh, look, he's a little microbat, so he's a southern free-tail microbat, which is local to a lot of areas in Victoria, and he would probably weigh about 20 grams, I would say. He's quite small. He's only a young one, but they don't get any bigger than probably sitting in the palm of your hand.
And as far as microbats go, do you think that George Jr. is a handsome one?
I think he's very handsome.
He's listening. So I
can't say anything while he's still in the room.
Now, the thing is there are quite a few species of microbats that do occur in Victoria. Is George Jr., is he one of the common ones?
He is one of the more common ones we have, but we do have 21 species of microbat in Victoria, and a lot of them are actually found out up in the northeast. And they're actually mostly found in, a lot of people think they're sleeping in caves. Most of them actually sleep in trees. So you'll find them out in the paddock or out even in your backyard.
Yes, so they're so small that they could even get in under the bark?
Oh, yeah. A lot of the species sleep in cracks or even sometimes under the bark, or even in sometimes you have the old fence posts on a lot of the farms around here that might have some of those cracks in them. You might find some in there.
They're pretty good with the camo, though, aren't they? Because they're very perfectly blended into that old wood-style colour.
A lot of them are very browny-grey type colour, but we do have some species, such as a white-striped free-tail bat, that they have a bit of a Collingwood theme happening. brilliant black with a bit of white right underneath their wing.
Now, with microbats, I always fancied that I'd like a few around the house to keep the mozzie problem down because I understand that their flying insects, they really like eating them, right?
That's all they eat is insects, basically. And they're really hungry little guys as well because they can eat up to half or three quarters of their body weight in a night of insects.
So he's got to go out and catch 10 grams of mosquitoes. That's a lot of mosquitoes.
Well, considering how big he is, that is quite a lot. And when you think on how many microbats there are individuals out there each night, that's a lot of insects that they're eating.
Thanks, George, on behalf of everybody who doesn't like mosquitoes. But the thing is, when you've got, say, a bat like George who you keep in captivity, how do you keep up those insects to him? Because you'd have to be breeding a million mosquitoes.
Well, they don't just eat mosquitoes. A lot of them, that's a fair amount of their diet, but they also eat a lot of bugs and moths and all the other range of insects that we have out there. George actually was fed last night. I had to hand feed him. He's in, reason why we have George, he was handed in to us because he was a little baby bat found. He somehow got abandoned. And so we've raised him up from hand. And it takes probably each time I feed him about an hour and a half to feed him because he's that hungry.
He's that hungry.
Yeah.
Now, George does have the funniest little tail.
He does. So he's a what we call a free-tail bat. And, I'm just trying to find where he is. He's sitting underneath my collar.
Yeah, he's crawling around the back of Michaela's collar.
So what George has, which unfortunately the listeners can't see, but I'll describe, some bats, not all of them, have a piece of skin in between their two back legs and it joins up to their tail. So they have this kind of little, what we call like almost a web of skin in between their legs. So bats typically catch all their insects on the wing, and this bat has a bit kind of a special trick. What he can do is, instead of just catching insects maybe as people would imagine in their mouths, they also can catch them in their tails and flick them back up. So they might swoop down, catch it somewhere on their body, it will kind of fall down into the tail, and then they can flick it back upwards so they can catch it in their mouth.
Now, to accurately portray just how incredible this is, George's tail is probably about 1.5 centimetres long and it is probably a millimetre thick,
yeah.
I would say. It's a very fine tail. So he's got quite good control.
Oh, they have a lot of control. And his tail's not only used for this kind of catching mechanism, but it's also used to help him navigate, and he's a very fast flyer. So it's kind of like a rudder in a way as well.
Now, when George walked in, he as I said, he might be a little bit hungover from last night's big dinner that he had, because he was a bit uncomfortable. He gave us a couple of squeaks. And look, I was under the impression that you don't normally hear bats.
Well, when you say you don't hear bats, it's when you don't hear them flying around echolocating. So echolocating is when they're kind of putting out a squeak, like a sonar, and that sound bounces back off things and insects and tells them where they are in what's around them. What you heard was actually George just putting out a bit of a squeak, going, "What's going on? You've woken me up. I'm not so happy." And the bats will actually squeak to each other, and that we can hear. It's the echolocation that mostly we can't hear, apart from one species, which is the white-striped feed-tailed bat, which I spoke about before, the Collingwood bat.
Yeah.
That's the one we actually can hear, and it flies really high above the canopy, but it has a low enough echolocation sound that we can hear, and it sounds like two coins kind of clinking together.
Indeed, and the younger you are, the more likely you are to be able to hear the bat as well, because as you get old, your hearing goes and you actually lose that higher range of hearing, which is a bit unfortunate. But while we're on the calls, there is actually a little machine that you can use to find out what sort of bats are around it, and it makes a funny sort of noise. I've got a little bit of the noise here. It's a little tiny machine, and what you can do is each of those bats, as they have sonar and they send their sonar signals out, it's actually specific to the species, isn't it?
It is. It is. We call those anabats, and we use a lot of them. It's a way we can remotely find out what species are in an area without actually having to catch them. So each species has an individual call, so it's at a different frequency range, and it also is a different pattern. So for example, you might hear one species might have a pattern of squeak, 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 where another one might be squeak, 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 squeak. So what we can do, we can record these calls, we can look at it in special software that's able to put that visually for us, and then we can identify what there he's starting to talk again. We can identify what species are around us.
It's pretty incredible, and you can sort of do it in a visual way, so you can map how many species are about. Now, you can also, when you're counting bats, trap them. But it isn't like you would imagine. It's not with a butterfly net.
No, it's definitely not. It's actually a little bit bigger than that. It's called a harp trap. And the harp trap is probably a couple metres high and maybe a metre or so wide. And it's basically made out of very fine fishing line, more finer than you could actually buy in a normal shop. And it's specially designed that the bats will fly into it, but they won't be hurt because there's a lot of give in this fishing line. So they fly into it, it will stop them, and they will kind of, like a bit of a cartoon, slide down the fishing line and into a catch bag below. So the bag is like a big canvas bag, and when they get into the catch bag, they kind of like pick themselves up and go, "Oh, what was that?" And then they'll crawl up the sides of the canvas bag. And so in this canvas bag, there's a bit of an inner lining of plastic. And so they crawl up under this inner lining, and there they're quite comfortable. And they kind of sit there and go to sleep until we come and find them.
Yeah, there's like little protective areas inside the bag. Yeah. Oh, you can hear George, everybody. If I be quiet, he won't do it though, will he?
He's probably wondering what's going on.
He can hear this radio business going on. Look, in studio with me, I have bat ecologist Michaela Jemison and microbat George Jr., who is being a little antisocial at this stage, and he's actually hiding underneath the collar of Michaela, but we occasionally can hear him. I hope you can hear him at home giving us a little bit of a squeak. Now, the thing is, why would you want to know what microbats are out there?
Why? Well, they're really an important element of our ecosystem, and they're important in several different ways. They're not only what we call insect controllers and all that kind of thing, but they're really important in terms of our agricultural use of trying to produce a lot of our crops and stuff, because one of the things that is quite important that they provide for us is in terms of keeping our insect populations under control, and especially some of our agricultural pests. One of the problems that is happening recently, hello George, yes I can hear you, is in America there is a disease that is actually wiping out a lot of their bat populations, and it's a fungal disease, and it's something that we really want to keep out of Australia. And the reason why, it's not only just because it's wiping out populations, it's actually going to cause cost to the agricultural production, because it means with increased insect load, there's going to be increased need for pesticides and all those kind of things that's actually going to cost us money. So not only are we concerned about bats in terms of being good for the environment, being an integral part of the ecosystem, but we're also concerned about them in terms of what they provide for us as an agricultural industry as well.
Now, with that in mind, I'm going to move on from that, but just as I'm looking at you, George is just poking his head out. I think he's starting to warm up, and you can definitely hear him coming through my headphones. George Jr. is a microbat, and he is in studio with us today. He's just warming up. I think he's going to climb over your back now.
Yeah, most likely. He likes to do that when he wakes up.
Yes. Well, but look, on that issue then, if they are so good for agriculture, what can we do to encourage them on our farms or in our agricultural areas?
Oh, come here, George. Sorry, everyone. He's just climbing up my collar, and I just have to make sure that he stays put. Here we go. One of the important things for microbats, as we said, they live in trees, a lot of them. And one thing we have been doing is cutting down a lot of our old trees. I understand sometimes it's necessary, but in other places, you know, a lot of our farms have individual big old trees in some of our paddocks and things like that. One of the things in Australia is the type of trees, the eucalypts and everything we have, it takes them a long time to form hollows, up to 100 years. And these little guys really rely on them. So looking after any of your old trees would be really good. And even your dead stags or dead trees around the place, these are the places where these little microbats live. And we really need to try and protect their little homes, because the more of the... Sorry, he's getting a little bit active. The more of... I might put him back in his bay, because he's just crawling all over me right
now.
That's
no way for a rock star to be treated, is it, to be put back in his little bag?
Well, he's just woken up so much, I think he's after some food, and I think it's time for him to go back in his bag. But one of the, as we were saying, the trees, looking after old stags and old trees on your properties are really good ways to encourage microbats to be on your property. And even if you live in a urban setting, any trees you have in your backyard, or even... putting up bat boxes.
Well, I was going to ask, will they nest or sleep in a human-made environment?
They will. We often find bats can take up roost in houses sometimes, in the attics and things like that. And they're some people enjoy them, some people not so much, but they don't actually cause any structural damage or anything like that. They're just after somewhere to roost. We also can make them artificial homes in terms of bat boxes, and they're a little bit different from possum boxes or bird boxes in that they're specially designed for the entrances to come up from the bottom of the box and not the top of the box. Bats will not enter a box that has the hole at the top. They will only enter one at the bottom.
Right, so they like crawling up and in. It probably makes them feel safer, does it?
Yep, it does make them feel safer, and it's something less animals can get in there, so that means that they're more safe from other predators.
So... in terms of the population of all the different species of microbats, 21 different microbats can be found in Victoria. I mean, are we looking at high numbers? Are there endangered lists? How are we going?
Yeah. Look, we're not going too bad. There are, out of the 21, there are about 4 that are endangered. Up in Victoria, there around the northern area, there's about 1 or 2 that are endangered more. For example, the greater lesser long-eared bat is an endangered one, found a little bit more west from here. But it's one of those things where, again, looking after their habitats is one of the most important things.
Now, today, it is National Science Week.
It is.
And we're very pleased that you're coming. And today, George Jr. is actually off. He's got a couple of gigs.
He does. He's got a whole day lined up.
He's off to Tewton Primary School this afternoon, and we were just trying to warm him up for the show this morning. How do you think he will perform?
Oh, look, I think he'll perform well. I think he's a young bat, so he's obviously got the stamina. And hopefully the kids will find him quite interesting.
He is very interesting. He is tiny. He's less than the palm of your hand. His little face has a little turned-up nose, but it's much more pointy than a pug dog. He's got a very pronounced brow that comes right down over his eyes, because the eyes aren't particularly important for the bats. The ears are sticking quite out sideways at the moment because he's not very awake. He's got a fluffy fur collar on.
Yes, he does.
He's got fleshy wings, and he has, as we said before, a very odd little, very thin, probably a millimetre thick tail. He's George Jr. He's a microbat, and bat ecologist Michaela Jemison, thank you so much for coming in today.
Oh, look, it was a pleasure.